Next, Non-Human Radio. Welcome to the October 11th, 2017 episode of Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico, or streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. Today we're going to talk about the sad, bloody intersection of human rights and animal rights with a touch of good old-fashioned religion. Then we'll bid farewell to a majestic wild mountain lion in Southern California, and we'll end by taking aim at the dark side of veganism. Over to you, Jeannie.
Thanks, Danny. Before we start, I wanted to update our listeners on ways they can help their community, our community, during the devastating wildfires hitting the North State right now. Animal Place is evacuating its Vacaville Rescue and Adoption Center due to the Atlas Fire in the North Bay. They will be bringing all 1,000 animals from their Vacaville location to their Grass Valley Sanctuary in Nevada County. This will create a significant strain on the current staff, so Animal Place is asking for help. Volunteers are needed starting tomorrow, Thursday, October 11th, and in the days ahead to help with cleaning the barns for all these new intake of animals. Please call Patty Nyman at Animal Place at 530-913-8819 to get set up on a volunteer work shift. Thank you very much. So please call Patty at Animal Place at 530-913-8819 to help them with barn cleaning and animal care at their new animals being transferred. Also, CAVE at Chico State is collecting relief items for victims of the North Bay fires. They're accepting donations at their office, which is located at the BMU, Bell Memorial Union, room 309. On the Chico State campus until 3 p.m. this Friday, October 13th. The items will be delivered to evacuation centers in the North Bay next week. CAVE is requesting the following items: baby food, pet food, water, toilet paper, school supplies, and canned food. So those will be posted on our Facebook page at Non-Human Radio. And additionally, you can help locally in Butte County by donating to the North Valley Animal Disaster Group, as well as other groups, but this is animal related. North Valley Animal Disaster Group has provided the bulk of animal rescue and sheltering for Butte County for over 5 years, and they are providing professional level assistance with completely unpaid volunteer staff. You can help cover some of their expenses in mobilizing for what is their fourth time this year by donating at nvadg.org, navdag.org, or you can donate through their Facebook page at North Valley Animal Disaster Group. They are a 501c3 nonprofit, so your donations will be tax deductible to the extent permitted by law. And that's, again, go ahead and support North Valley Animal Disaster Group. Our first story, we'll start with our first story now. Across the country, judges are increasingly sending defendants to rehab instead of to prison or jail. These, quote, diversion courts have become the bedrock of criminal justice reform, aiming to transform lives and ease overcrowded prisons.
This sounds like it's going to be a good story.
But in the rush to spare people from prison, some judges steer defendants into rehab groups that are little more than lucrative work camps for private industry, in a story released by the Center for Investigative Reporting, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan, independent news agency. The programs promise freedom from addiction. Instead, they've turned thousands of men and women into indentured servants. The beneficiaries of these programs span the country, from Fortune 500 companies to factories and local businesses, including a Coca-Cola bottling plant in Oklahoma, a construction firm in Alabama, and a nursing home in North Carolina. But relevant to Non-Human Radio, no rehab better exemplifies the linkage between big business than this group called the Christian Alcoholics and Addicts in Recovery, or CAIR for short, C-A-A-I-R, which was started in 2007 by a chicken company. Their executives were struggling to find workers, and by forming a Christian rehab, they could supply their processing plants with a cheap and captive labor force while helping men overcome their addictions. At CARE, about 200 men live on a compound in northeastern Oklahoma, and most of those men work full-time at Simmons Food, Inc., which is a company with an annual revenue of $1.4 billion with a B dollars. These men slaughter and process chickens for some of the world America's largest retailers and restaurants, including Walmart, KFC, and Popeyes. They also make pet food for PetSmart and Rachel Ray's Nutrish brand. As we've reported on Non-Human Radio, chicken processing plants are notoriously dangerous and understaffed. The hours in these plants are long, the pay is low, and the conditions are brutal for both humans and, of course, for the chickens. Men in the CARE program reported that their hands became gnarled and painful after just days spent on hanging thousands of chickens from their metal shackles before they're being their throats are cut for slaughter. One man said he was burned with acid while hosing down a trailer. Others were maimed by machines or otherwise contracted serious bacterial infections. The Center for Investigative Reporting uncovered court records that show that those who were hurt and could no longer work often were kicked out of the program and sent to prison. Therefore, many of the men work through pain because they don't want to get kicked out and go to prison. At some rehabs, defendants get to keep their pay, right? At some of these other programs that I've mentioned, they get to keep their pay. But through CARE, which is the Christian Alcoholics and Addicts in Recovery of Oklahoma, they do not get to keep their pay. Instead of paychecks, the men just get bunk beds, meals, AA and Narcotics Anonymous meetings. If there's time between work shifts, they can meet with a counselor or attend classes on anger management and parenting. Weekly Bible study is mandatory, and for the first 4 months, so is church. So most of their days revolve strictly around work.
I mean, I'm struggling on what to comment here. I mean, this is just all pretty horrific. This sounds like North Korea, right? This is prison labor. Let's see, these are work camps. These are, you know, taking people's pay. And probably
this is from the 19th century.
Yeah, this is not, right? You know, and this is going on right now in America. You're taking, you know, there are many studies that correlate animal abuse to violence. And here we're taking, you know, prisoners who are probably violent, you know, to some degree, and then having them go perpetuate violence. And like, in what way is this, you know, positive for anybody?
Legal experts say forcing defendants to work for free might violate their constitutional rights. The 13th Amendment, of course, bans slavery and involuntary servitude in the United States, except as a punishment for convicts. This is to your point. That's why prison labor programs are legal.
And that's why certain political parties push for things like three strikes and other, you know, prison pipelines.
Mandatory prison sentences,
get people in jail quicker.
But the defendants that get sent to programs such as CARE have not been convicted of crimes, and so they hope to have their cases dismissed.
Because also you can labor in, you can sit around in prison forever before you go to jail, before you get a trial. You know, you're stuck in that limbo.
There's that too. For Simmons Foods, the program has become an invaluable labor source. Over the years, the company has laid off paid employees while expanding its use of CARE. Simmons now is so reliant on the program for some shifts that the plants would likely shut down if the men didn't show up, according to former staff members and plant supervisors. A spokesman for Simmons Foods said the company does not depend on CARE to fill a labor shortage, instead characterizing it as an opportunity to, quote, build relationships with our community and supporting the opportunity to help people become productive citizens, end quote. The tax record, however, shows a different story. The CARE program brought in more than $11 million in revenue for Simmons Foods, according to tax filings. The Center for Investigative Reporting also found that CARE files workers' comp claims on defendants' behalf and then collects the payments. By law, those payments are required to go to the injured worker, but the CARE record shows otherwise. In Oklahoma, the State Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services funds and monitors drug courts. The agency knows that judges are using uncertified providers such as CARE when they send defendants there. But officials say that there's little they can do. All they can do is perhaps cut some of the funding to drug courts that use those programs, but that's little disincentive to judges because this CARE program doesn't cost the court anything. So if you're cutting the budget to the drug courts, it's really not going to hurt CARE and other work programs like this. The loss However, a class action lawsuit was filed yesterday, October 9th, against CARE and Simmons Food in the wake of this national news investigation. The lawsuit was filed in the Northern District of Oklahoma, and it accuses CARE and Simmons Food of violating Fair Labor Standards Act, Oklahoma's Protection of Labor Act, Oklahoma's Minimum Wage Act, and Oklahoma's human trafficking statutes. So,
I'd love to know how many of these prisoners were people of color here in the Christian South exploiting these people for labor.
Yeah. I don't have the stats on that. I do know that Simmons operates 3 hatcheries and 2 feed mills, and they supply nearly 300, quote, independent poultry growers with animal feed. And contribute to the raising of approximately 200 million chickens per year. So I just think that this is an example of, you know, just one of the many dimensions that our food choices matter.
Yeah.
For the animals, for the unseen humans who work in conditions that you would never want to work in, even if you were being paid.
Right.
And just, you know, consider the source a little more.
I don't hear anyone screaming that they're taking their jobs, right? You know, if you were local.
Oh, yeah.
You know, here's a sort of a government-subsidized prison labor that's taking somebody's job if they wanted it. All right.
You're listening to Non-Human Radio on KCFR 90.1 FM. What's up next, Danny?
The California-based Mountain Lion Foundation reports that the king of the vertigos has fallen. The Santa Monica National Park Service confirmed that P41, the only male mountain lion in the Vertigo Mountain Range in California, died recently of unknown causes. The loss of this critically important individual mountain lion was likely due to health complications or injuries related to September's Vertigo fire, the largest fire in LA history. He was approximately 10 years old. Originally captured and collared in an effort to study his species' dispersal patterns in highly fragmented habitats, P41 represented one of the few lions residing in the Vertigo Mountains, which connected the larger Santa Monica and San Gabriel mountain ranges. With his loss, just one identified mountain lion remains in the Vertigos, an elusive female only known through trail camera footage. Mountain lion populations in Southern California reside in highly fragmented habitat crisscrossed by highways and urban zones and just people everywhere. P41's ability to survive in such a small area bordered by development was a notable point of interest for carnivore biologists.
Yeah, it just adds another hurdle that wild animals have to overcome. Yeah. It's like hard enough to make a living as a mountain lion, but now you have to navigate highways and people's backyards.
Right. And people with guns. P41 was discovered on December 9th, 2010, via remote sensing cameras deployed by citizen scientist Johanna Turner, who contacted the National Park Service, NPS. Since being captured and outfitted with a GPS collar in 2015, P41 has provided NPS researchers insight on his movements and the land use and habitats.
That's how he got that name, by the way, P41, because that's the label on his collar. So somewhere out there, there's a mountain lion P40,
right,
and a P39. And it's just, I think it's a way not to anthropomorphize or to make these animals into pets by giving them, you know, more recognizable names. So P41 it is.
Yeah. P41 lived in a 19-square-mile habitat surrounded by freeways and urbanization. Male mountain lions in unrestricted landscapes can have territories that range from 150 to 250 square miles, so quite a difference. Remote sensing trail cameras have spotted 2 sets of cubs over the years, and researcher and citizen scientists watch them grow to around 1 year of age. Male mountain lions matching the age of the first litter were struck on the freeway and killed. One was hit on the 210 freeway, and the other was hit on Highway 2 near a large sports complex. Researchers think that these 2 male juveniles were dispersing to find their own home range. So rather sad, much like you see many cats getting hit around here. You don't get too many chances to make a mistake crossing a freeway.
Exactly. It's very lethal.
The most recent litter was only seen once when they were very young in the winter of 2016, then never again. Though the cubs' current fate is unknown, male lions have been observed killing their own cubs and fighting with females, behavior that becomes increasingly common in small, fragmented areas like the Vertigos. Like, this is, what, 1/5 to 1/6 of their natural range is kind of the space they're living in.
Right.
Or was living in.
And they're going to crowd each other out. and either kill each other or try to, you know, get away and, as they say, disperse.
Right.
And then they face crossing a highway.
The Mountain Lion Foundation's current road ecology project is working to identify which culverts and drainage pipes are actively being used by wildlife that allows them to travel between the San Gabriel Mountain Range and the Vertigo Mountains, an area crisscrossed by major Southern California freeways and roads. I kind of wish we'd do some of that up here along I-5 and 32, but alas. We don't know where the King of the Vertigos was born or where he came from, but P-41 lived as Burbank's mascot and ambassador for Southern California's struggling wildlife. His photographs and videos captured the imagination of the public, and his GPS collar gave valuable insight to the behavior and resilience of mountain lions. He was a father, watcher of trails, and keeper of the Vertigos. Long live the king. In related news, the Mountain Lion Foundation reports that the California Superior Court issued a decision last week in a 2016 lawsuit against Monterey County's predator killing program. The suit challenged renewal of the county's contract with USDA Wildlife Services, who we talk about frequently, to kill mountain lions, bobcats, and coyotes as so-called pests. Last week, the court concluded that Monterey County violated the California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA, by failing to assess the environmental impact of its killing program. According to the decision, the county wrongfully claimed an exemption from CEQA. The county argued that its contract for predator control would not result in a significant environmental change. Give me a break there. You can't kill a single mountain lion, and this is a huge environmental change. You know?
This is the value of something like CEQA, right?
Yeah.
It allows environmentalists and animal advocates to have hooks into offhand decisions such as no significant environmental damage caused by eliminating a major predator from
an apex predator,
which
is already well on the decline. The court, however, found no evidence to support that bogus claim and ruled against renewing the county's contract with USDA's Wildlife Services. So that was the little bit of good news in this story.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Good work by the Mountain Lion Foundation, and they didn't do that alone. There were a lot of animal groups, such as Animal Legal Defense Fund and their own Humane Society in that county that all worked to make that happen. So, yeah, that was
great. What's next, Jeannie?
Thanks, Danny. I want to share a blog post from J.L. Fields, who is a vegan culinary instructor, author, and animal advocate. She notes, she notes that these days, from vegan events and to online Facebook posts, there's a loud chorus of people suggesting that people avoid a number of otherwise vegan foods in order to, quote, to be, quote, disease-proof or to live, like, forever to a triple-digit age. And I just think it's something that I wanted the audience to think about. I want you and I, Danny, to talk about it just a little bit. It's JL's opinion that those messages, these health messages, are far more about dieting and restricting foods than about simply eating vegan food, right? She goes on to say that, of course, health reasons do pull people into veganism and that it can have a profound impact on some people, leading them to better health, weight loss, and even disease reversal and prevention. Yes, all that can happen. And we've had, folks on this show to talk about those effects. But the key is those benefits only apply to some people. She goes on to ask, what about the people who are eating animals, who are in good health, who are fit, and who already meet society's standard of beauty, which is to say those folks who are skinny?
Exactly.
Those health arguments aren't going to necessarily influence the many, many, many people who don't fall into the category of fat or unfit or who are on the verge of some chronic disease. In fact, it's confusing for those people because they are under the impression that eating vegan, they are under the correct impression that eating vegan means simply not eating animals or their byproducts, right? Of course, people need to hear about the impact of animal agriculture and the use and abuse of animals on animals, right? They need to hear, for instance, like our first story where we talk about the impact not only on chickens, but on humans of animal agriculture and the concomitant impact on the environment of animal agriculture. And as a bonus, she says, eating vegan can be good for you. But people need to hear that eating a vegan diet and living a vegan lifestyle is within reach, right? That it isn't a sacrifice of food flavor or a fashion sense to stop wearing leather.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that the majority of food type of discussions, diets, programs, these are all built to sell books, right? These are all, you know, very few people are giving you a diet book because they really care about your health. They're coming up with things that are marketable, and that's why there's different fad diets every couple of years. I'm like, hey, it's the chocolate diet. Eat all the chocolate you want and lose weight. That sounds great, right? They're none of them actually even typically work. And, you know, veganism gets caught up in this and gets caught up in pulling people over from that side of the fence, and you just sort of end up with a lot of this sort of magical thinking and misunderstanding, you know, the key points of it.
Yeah.
You could be a very unhealthy vegan, even by legitimate standards. You know, maybe I really do eat, coconut oil all day, but you're still saving animals. You're still saving abused workers. You're still reducing your impact on the environment. You know, these are all important things to the sort of the ethical vegan, more comprehensive way of looking at it versus just, you know, what's going to make me prettier or, healthier or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing about the live forever or, you know, looking younger than your actual age and the go plant-based, get skinny approach is that many people, you know, aren't influenced by other people's version of beauty or fitness, right? They believe that health and beauty can come in a variety of shapes and sizes.
And they do.
And that how someone chooses to eat vegan is their own choice and isn't up for debate or argument. She goes on to write, those vegan promises of being skinny and eternal youth can sometimes make people like me, she's speaking about herself, feel really horrible. Like we're not doing this vegan thing right.
Right.
Right. It's true. I mean, if you set out an example like this is how you should be vegan, and then you set up like a list of foods to eat or whole, you know, things to avoid such as fat or salt
right.
or chocolate or milk chocolate or something like that. You feel like you're doing things wrong if you consume
right.
those products.
I mean, in terms of health, like, you know, we had vegan athlete racing in here a few weeks ago. Travis was just lurking in our foyer taking pictures, and like both Travis and Hyland from Vegan Athlete Racing were already super fit athletes before they became vegan, and they remain super fit athletes. So I might look at them and go, oh, if I go vegan, I can go ride a bike for 100 miles. No. You know, and they don't press
right.
it that way. Jeannie and I are a little bit more on the you know, the radio side of athleticism. And that hasn't changed for us either when we went vegan. You know, like your kind of fitness level and health is really often orthogonal to what you're eating and more to how much you're working out and how on top of those things you are.
Yeah.
And we don't want to drive people away from reducing suffering in the world or stop being vegan because there's sort of the judgy vegan police, as we say, out there.
Yeah. So, yeah, I just think it's important that, you know, we understand that veganism comes with a clear understanding that it is the only way of eating and living that benefits non-human animals, right? Whatever your on-ramp is for getting animals off your plate, which can be a health argument, the underlying benefit is that it reduces suffering for non-human animals. And also, as we talked about in our first show, it can reduce it for humans also. So I just thought this. Well, I'll post a link to this blog piece. I think it's something great for vegans and non-vegans to think about and understand.
I mean, I like to think about what's the impact of purchasing this product or the manufacturer of the product more than what's the impact of this product on me. That's just sort of the way I look at things.
That's a common sense way of looking at things. So anyway, this is Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio.
All right, it's time for the Chico Animal Rights Calendar of Events. Get out your pencils, get ready to mark your calendars.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Foodie tip of the month. During the month of October, restaurants throughout the greater Sacramento area will be featuring special vegan menu items.
How do we get this in Chico? We're kind of the greater Sacramento area.
We need someone to step up and get our local restaurants. Yeah. Anyway, diners have the opportunity to go out, order, and enjoy these vegan options and vote. And select the best vegan chef in Sacramento. And this is, I think, their fourth or fifth annual event. You can find out more information by going to www.theveganchefchallenge.com, or you can find them on Facebook at Sacramento Vegan Chef Challenge. And it's really neat because these are not all vegetarian restaurants that are participating in this. It's regular omnivore restaurants bring in their best to make some good vegan options. Tonight, Wednesday, October 11th, is the Buffalo Field Campaign 2017 Roadshow at the Pageant Theater. Buffalo Field Campaign co-founder and campaign coordinator Mike Mees will be hitting Chico again for his annual Buffalo Field Campaign Roadshow. He has been inspiring communities all over the United States to step up and save the wild bison. You can go to www.pageantchico.com for more info, or just show up at 7 o'clock for the show. This Sunday, the Liberty for Life Vigil will be happening, sponsored by Sacramento Animal Save. Join Sacramento Animal Save in bearing witness to animals being sold at the Roseville Livestock Auction. The Roseville Livestock Auction sells chickens, pigeons, ducks, and other animals for the purpose of slaughter. And Sacramento Animal Save will be there to show solidarity with these animals and witnessing the moments before they are sold. And that'll be from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. at 1401 Church Street in Roseville on Sunday, October 15th. For more information, you can check out Sacramento Animal Save's Facebook page. And then what else we have coming up? A couple of Thanksgiving celebrations are coming up, but I will go ahead and post those to our Facebook page so you guys can join, get that information online. All right. We have one last piece of business to take care of, and that's the animal rights quote of the week. Take it away, Danny.
Our quote of the week is from Leo Tolstoy, who wrote, "When the suffering of another creature causes you to feel pain, do not submit to the initial desire to flee from the suffering one, but on the contrary, come close as you can to him who suffers and try to help him." Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Many thanks to Sue Hildebrand for her engineering assistance and moral support. Stay tuned for Sue's show, The Real Issue, coming up next.
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, or its staff. We do, however, reflect the opinions of our non-human fellow earthlings who would rather not be killed and eaten, hunted, raced, experimented upon, or otherwise abused.
Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist Rockers Rise Against. If you missed any portion of this show or you want to listen again, go to the archives at kzfr.org and look for Non-Human Radio. This is Danny Toms and Jeannie Trezino signing off. Until next week, be different, be better, be kind.
And go vegan. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond.